What's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Asian markets mixed following Monday's global plunge. China's benchmark Shanghai opened today down more than 6% after falling nearly 9% Monday. Other Asian markets opened lower but later rebounded. Monday, global markets plunged on concerns over China's faltering economy. U.S. stocks plunged at the open, finishing down nearly 4%. Prices for many commodities also declined, the price of crude oil off by more than 4%, to the lowest price in more than 6 years. Ben Willis is with Princeton Securities.
The world stock markets are repricing the Chinese economy. The Chinese economy had been the lifesaver to the world economy going back to 2007 in the Great Recession. They were the single most important economy in the world at the time. They're the second largest economy in the world. What the global stock markets are doing and have been doing for this past month is repricing a growth in China that is less than it had been.
A series of economic shocks, including a falling stock market, a surprise currency devaluation, made investors question the health and growth of China's economy. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon met in Abuja Monday with Nigeria's President Buhari, promising solidarity in the fight against insecurity, unemployment, and corruption. Mr. Ban also took the occasion to demand the release of more than 200 Nigerian schoolgirls abducted 500 days ago by Boko Haram in the northeast town of Chibok.
I want to reiterate my support for the Chibok girls and so many other innocent abducted girls and boys whose names and fate remain unknown. It is intolerable that their lives and schooling has been disrupted in this way.
Mr. Ban called the humanitarian situation in Nigeria's northeast particularly worrying. This is VOA News. South Korea has agreed to halt propaganda broadcasts into North Korea Tuesday after Pyongyang expressed regret over the recent injury of two South Korean soldiers in a landmine explosion. The agreement reached after marathon talks defused the latest confrontation on the Korean Peninsula. John Kirby is a U.S. spokesman.
What's important here is that the two sides did get together. They did come to an agreement. They both found mutually satisfactory. And that's the important thing. And that tensions now, which had been running pretty high over the last several days, have an opportunity to decrease a little bit.
South Korean presidential security advisor said the two Koreas also agreed to hold talks soon on improving ties 62 years after they ended the Korean War with an armistice, not a peace treaty. The two sides said they'll resume reunions in September for families separated by the conflict. The head of UNESCO has called the destruction by Islamic State militants in the ancient Syrian city Palmyra a war crime. Sunday, militants blew up the 2,000-year-old Baal Shamin Temple nearly a week after beheading Khalid Assad, archaeologist and former head of antiquities in Palmyra, who spent decades preserving the site. IS fighters captured the town in May, reportedly executed more than 200 people in and around Palmyra. After Sunday's blast, Syria's antiquities chief Mahmoud Abdul Karim told AFP our worst fears are sadly being realized. He calls on the international community to act to liberate the city by all means. Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has called new parliamentary elections after a deadline passed for forming a government with the opposition. The move announced in a presidential statement Monday was widely expected after 2 months of coalition talks failed to produce a new government. Mr. Erdogan's Justice and Development Party lost its parliamentary majority in June for the first time since 2002, forcing it to enter talks with the opposition to form a coalition alliance. Tuareg separatists in Mali say they are suspending their participation in the committee monitoring a peace agreement with the government until pro-government militia withdraw from captured territory. Tensions mounted after the platform coalition took the town of Anafis from the Tuareg Alliance, known as the Coordination of Azawad Movements, or CMA, August 17. The action threatened a fragile peace accord reached back in June. A Sudanese migrant who walked the length of Channel Tunnel from France to Britain has pleaded not guilty to charges at a British court. 40-year-old Abdul Haroon was arrested August 4 after being found in the tunnel near its exit in the county of Kent. The company Eurotunnel says it has blocked more than 37,000 migrants trying to cross illegally from continental Europe to Britain since the beginning of the year. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Batty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 25th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Burundi's president announces a new government, but some say it is like old wine in new bottles.
If you look at the main ministers, the people who are in those positions are the same people from the same ruling party. I don't see nothing inclusive in this new government.
Innocent Muhozi is the general manager of the band Independent Renaissance Radio and Television Network of Burundi. Amnesty International accuses Burundi's security of torturing detainees. Nigeria charges its former security chief, but some say it is vendetta. And Sierra Leone discharges its last Ebola patient and begins a countdown to zero.
This is the first time in 456 days since the outbreak was announced in Sierra Leone that we can confidently say that tomorrow there will be no patients in our treatment centers.
Vice President Ernest Bai Koroma of Sierra Leone, the family of a missing Zimbabwe human rights activist, presents a petition to President Robert Mugabe. And why is Cameroon banning cheap imported vegetable oil? Those stories, plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza on Monday announced a new government following his re-election to a controversial third term. But some say the new government is like old wine in new bottles because some of the key ministers have been retained from the ruling CNDD-FDD party, including Foreign Minister Alain Nyamitwe. Innocent Muhozi is the general manager of the band Independent Renaissance Radio and Television Network of Burundi. He says the return of Alain Guillaume Bouyonne as public security minister suggests that President Nkurunziza wants to continue the crackdown on his critics.
This new government, for me, is not a surprise because it shows that the main figures of the former government, that means the foreign affairs minister, the defense minister, and the finance minister also, but there is also the coming back of the security minister who a few years ago was at this same place, and who today is seen as one of the main figures of the ruling party and the government, General Alain Guillaume Bouyonne. So it seems like it's a government of not inclusion, but maybe fighting against those that we have to confront.
I think it was last week that I spoke to the foreign affairs minister who has been reappointed, Alain Nyamitwe, and he said that the government was ready to form a more inclusive government. Now you are saying that the new government seems to be one that will be more repressive than inclusive. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm afraid it will be like that because if you look at the main ministers, the people who are in those positions are the same people from the same ruling party. I don't see nothing inclusive in this new government. As it has been said by many observers, if you look at what is going on every day, people arrested, people tortured, people are disappearing, and many people say it's the police or the intelligence that is doing those things. It's quite clear that what is going on maybe is just a continuation of what we've been witnessing in the last months.
The government had promised also that it will respect the Arusha Accord. So maybe the government is going to do more later.
It was not possible at this level to have a more maybe inclusive government because who are the ones who could be included in this government when we know that there is no opposition political party that gets more than 5% at the last election. So it's normal that maybe most of the people in the government belong to the ruling party. It's natural. And if they talk about changing the constitution, it's rather a problem because there are a lot of controversial topics when you say that you're going to change the constitution. But at the benefits of the government today, the way the President Nkurunziza formed this government is a natural way. It's normal because they are the only ones who were supposed to be in that government. So there's no surprise about that. There is no way to do something more inclusive if they respect the constitution.
Amnesty International came out Monday with a report on Burundi's security and how it probably forced people to confess to crimes. Has there been any reaction there from the government about the Amnesty International report?
Maybe there'll be some in the coming days, but they'll be really in trouble with these things. Those things they have been doing them during the daylight. Some people are arrested during the night, but most of the people also are also arrested during the daylight. So they will be in trouble, really in trouble, to explain what is going on, because policemen arrest people, and those people find them a few days later, dead bodies. It's a serious problem that the country is facing today, this fear that is around. And the anger that is going around is really dangerous in this country today.
Innocent Muhozi is the general manager of the Band Independent Renaissance Radio and Television Network of Burundi. He was speaking with me from the capital, Bujumbura. Amnesty International has accused Burundian security agencies of detaining anti-government protesters and beating them to extract so-called confessions and silence dissent. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
A report titled Just Tell Me What to Confess To says authorities are responsible for acts of torture and other ill treatment against people arrested after protests erupted in Burundi in April. That's when President Pierre Nkurunziza announced he will seek a third term, angering opponents who said he was violating constitutional term limits. Amnesty's Deputy Regional Director Sarah Jackson listed some of the accusations.
The intelligence service used iron bars to beat detainees. The police service used electric wires and batons to severely beat detainees. We have cases of demonstrators being tortured and made to coerced into making false confessions. And others who've been asked to reveal the names of other people who were involved in the protest movement.
UN monitors have documented similar cases involving protesters in detention. The UN Human Rights Office also says it has evidence the security forces and the Imbonerakure militia group killed dozens of demonstrators and rights activists. Jackson says security officers forced detainees to admit taking part in the protests.
They're forcing detainees to confess a range of things. Often it's related to participation in the protests. Some of them have been forced to confess in relation to state security charges. But we have one very compelling example of a man who said, you know, they told me if you don't confess, we'll kill you.
Amnesty is calling on Burundian authorities to act against officers involved in the torture and abuse of detainees. Burundian officials were not available for comment. President Nkurunziza was sworn in last Thursday, pledging to end the violence and calling on those who fled the country to return. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
The last Ebola patient in Sierra Leone was discharged yesterday from the treatment, and the country began the 42-day countdown to being declared Ebola-free. President Ernest Bai Koroma described the occasion as momentous, but he warned Sierra Leoneans that Ebola is not yet over. Reporter Kelvin Lewis has details from Freetown.
The last Ebola patient in Sierra Leone has been discharged from the Bombali District Ebola Treatment Center run by the International Medical Corps. 40-year-old Adama Sanko got infected with the Ebola virus by her 27-year-old son, who died 30 days ago. A smiling Adama thanked all those who had helped make her well again as she walked out of the center. President Koroma says this shows that the fight against Ebola is about to end.
This is the first time in 456 days since the outbreak was announced in Sierra Leone that we can confidently say that tomorrow there will be no patient in our treatment centers, and tomorrow we will start the countdown of 0 plus 42.
The president warned that Ebola is not over yet and that people must continue to be vigilant. He advocated for an extended 90-day period after the 42 days prescribed by the World Health Organization. The chief medical officer, Dr. Brian Makagbo, says the extended period is needed to make doubly sure.
Well, of course, we have had several instances where the virus has persisted in body fluids, where countries have been declared Ebola-free, but just close to 90 days, we see also new infections coming on. So that is why the president in his speech decided after 40 days, we give ourselves another 90 days to ensure that everybody in this country is completely free of the virus in this country.
This did not, however, dampen the spirits of the workers at the Ebola Treatment Center. They broke out into celebratory songs singing about the Ebola virus, which they believe has already been defeated. For VOA Africa, I'm Kelvin Lewis reporting from Makeni, Northern Sierra Leone.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 25th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 minutes past the hour. Nigeria's domestic intelligence agency said on Monday it had charged the country's former national security advisor with unlawful possession of firearms. In July this year, security forces raided the homes of former President Goodluck Jonathan's national security advisor, Mohamed Sambo Dasuki, saying they found credible intelligence linking him to alleged plans to commit treasonable felony against the Nigerian state. But Chika Oyani, publisher and editor-in-chief of the African Sun-Times newspaper, says some Nigerians believe the weapons charge is a retaliation against Dasuki, since he was the one who allegedly arrested Buhari on the orders of then-President Babangida, an allegation that Dasuki has denied.
This is a kind of a retaliatory on the part of President Buhari. There is the allegation that which Dasuki denied that he was the one who arrested Buhari on the orders of Babangida. So most Nigerians see what is going on between Buhari and Dasuki as a tit for tat, you know, and that is not how government should be run.
But Chika, the government says that Dasuki was not able to produce evidence of ownership of the weapons that were found in his possession.
Well, those weapons were bought for the government for the war on terror. And, you know, Dasuki should not be held accountable for the receipt of whatever weapons. Unfortunately, he might not have handed some weapons back, but he should not be held accountable for what happened.
Also, the government announced Monday night that it was launching an investigation, a probe into military purchases. What do you make of that?
We applaud his efforts to probe the government. What he said is that he is going to start probing from 2007. Why should you start from 2007? You should start from 1999, when the civilian administration started. PDP government started in 1999. That is when he should start to probe what happened. He should probe what happened at NNPC, where the former president, President Olusegun Obasanjo, was the petroleum minister for 8 years. He should probe why there was never any audit during the period of President Obasanjo's being the petroleum minister. He should probe why $16 billion was spent by Obasanjo in terms of the electricity sector, and the Nigerians are still in the dark.
The government said that this investigation is in line with President Buhari's determination to stamp out corruption.
Yeah, as I said, we applaud his efforts to stamp out corruption in Nigeria, but it should equally be applied to everybody who has looted the treasury of the country, whether it is on the state level or on the federal level.
Chika Onyani is the publisher and editor-in-chief of the African Sun-Times newspaper. He was speaking with me from New York City. The family of missing Zimbabwean human rights activist Itaye Zamora yesterday presented a petition to President Robert Mugabe and Speaker of Parliament Jacob Mudenda, in which they complained about the government's less-than-satisfactory efforts to find the missing activist. Itaye Zamora was abducted 5 months ago by as-yet-unknown assailants. Patson Zamora is Itai's brother.
The detainee is essentially our registering of displeasure over how this matter has been handled. We do believe that it is the fundamental right of every citizen to be protected by the state. And as far as how this matter progressed and culminated to where we are today, little has been done in our view as far as trying to locate the whereabouts of the child is concerned and trying to pile up pressure to whoever has the time to release us. And so those are the sentiments we express through the in the petition.
What role exactly do you want the president to play in this matter?
He is the head of state. And as you might be aware, his conversation actually once indicated that the child Damaran disappearing does not bother him in any way or is none of his business. The sentiment we see that is highly irresponsible and regrettable. And so as such, we employ the head of state, who one of his constitutional obligations is to ensure that the safety of citizens and freedom of expression is ensured.
Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa is quoted in the media appealing to the so-called prosperity gospel prophets to help find or locate Itai Dzamara. What do you make of that?
Yes, everyone can help, and I think that's a good remark from a leader. However, I didn't think that it had to take them 5 months to be serious about this matter.
Patson Dzamara is the brother of missing Zimbabwe human rights activist Itai Dzamara. He was speaking from Harare with reporter Untungamile Nkomo of VOA's Zimbabwe service. Cameroon says it is banning and destroying cheap vegetable oil imported from Indonesia and Malaysia to protect its home industries. The government says thousands of workers may lose their jobs if the country continues to import cheaper vegetable oil. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Aurelius Mbui, an official of Cameroon's agro-industrial company, the Cameroon Development Corporation, CDC, says the jobs of about 16,000 employees in six oil palm estates are threatened as a result of what he calls the unhealthy competition domestically produced refined vegetable oil faces. He says after examining the situation, Cameroon's prime minister ordered that imported vegetable oil must sell at about $3 per liter, which is about a dollar per liter more than domestic oil. If it does not sell at that higher price, it will be seized.
There were certain norms that were set indicating that oil that is imported in this country must be imported at a value price of 1,500 francs, and that oil must be in specific containers, and it should have vitamin A. But of recent, we've noticed that oil has been imported at prices lower than 1,500.
Cameroon has a huge appetite for vegetable oil. Its own companies produce 32,000 liters every month, according to the Cameroon Association of Vegetable Oil Producers, and an additional 20,000 liters per month has been imported, mainly from Malaysia and Indonesia. Jacques Kemble Chagbu, Secretary General of Cameroon's Association of Oil Producers, says many people were rushing for the imported vegetable oil because it is so much cheaper than locally produced oil.
We cannot accept that. We have four factories which has closed now, and a lot of factory is working in something like 50% of the capacity because you cannot produce when you cannot sell.
Economist Dr. Ariel Njitedem of the University of Yaoundé 1 disagrees with the ban and says Cameroon should instead have made its vegetable oil more competitive and of good quality. He says the ban was hastily conceived and may anger the World Trade Organization, WTO, of which Cameroon is a member.
We cannot close our market to the rest of the world. That would be against the WTO regulations. That can allow other countries to refuse our product too.
Cameroon already has a 40% unemployment rate. Government officials say the decision to ban the imports was made in order to save thousands of jobs. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
It's 25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin at the World Athletics Championships in Beijing, China. Defending champion Ezekiel Kemboi clocked 8 minutes and 11.28 seconds to lead a 1-2-3-4 Kenyan sweep in the men's 3,000 meters steeplechase. Kemboi's triumph is an unprecedented fourth consecutive trip to the summit of the medal podium, having previously triumphed in 2009, 2011, and 2013. As was the case 2 years ago, former world junior champion Conseslus Kipruto was again runner-up. Kenyan record holder 2007 world champion Brimin Kiprop Kipruto was third ahead of Jairus Kipchoge, the world's quickest athlete in the event in the past 2 years. Earlier on, Kenya's former world champion Vivian Jepkemoi Cheruiyot reclaimed the women's 10,000 meters crown with a winning time of 31 minutes and 41.31 seconds. Cheruiyot first won the event in 2011 World Championship, but did not defend the title 2 years ago as she took time off to have a baby. In Beijing, Ethiopian Gelete Burka was runner-up. Meanwhile, on Monday, Kenya surged to the summit of the medal table on the third day of the championship with 2 gold, 2 silver, and 2 bronze medals. Eritrea is 8th with 1 gold medal. Ethiopia is 11th with 2 silver medals, while Uganda is 16th with a bronze medal. Still in Beijing, today Tuesday, Kenyans David Rudisha, Alfred Kipketer, Ferguson Cheruiyot Rutich, along with Moroccan Nadir Belhanbel, compete in 800-meter finals. Ethiopians Genzebe Dibaba and Dawit Seyaum, Moroccans Malika Kawi and Rababi Arafi, along with Kenyan Faith Chepngetich Kipyegon, contest the women's 1500-meter finals, while Kenyans Nicholas Bett and Boniface Muchero line up in men's 400-meter hurdles final. Moving on to basketball, Senegal surprised defending champions Angola 74-73 at the Africa Men's Basketball Championships in the Tunisian capital Tunis on Monday. Mozambique pipped Morocco 85-82. Cape Verde Islands outplayed Zimbabwe 76-65. And Ivory Coast beat Algeria 81-76. Today, Tuesday, the knockout phase begins with teams vying for places in the quarterfinals. Cameroon face Algeria. Cape Verde Islands take on Gabon. Senegal engage Uganda. Nigeria face Mozambique. Ivory Coast play Mali. Egypt engage Zimbabwe. Angola tackle Central African Republic. And Tunisia encounter Morocco. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Tuesday morning, August 25th.
Dear Viewee, permit me to call on the attention of President Muhammadu Buhari to make sure Jews are involved in money laundering are brought to book. That is the urgent happiness in ordinary Nigerians is expecting from him. Because once this money is recovered, it will create opportunity for job creation for the ordinary Nigerians, and it will also boost the economy. I'm Suleiman Jamata, calling from Angwensha, Nigwawalada, FCC, Abuja, Nigeria. Thank you, VOA.
We thank you, listening for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Health officials in Sierra Leone released the country's last confirmed Ebola patient from the hospital on Monday, beginning a 42-day countdown to being declared free of the virus. And that is it for this Tuesday, August 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford and reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Strike, I am James Barty in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very good day.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on the Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time,
with David Bandy.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.